Corporate underwriting on KPBS offers a unique opportunity for brands to demonstrate their corporate social responsibility as public media brings light to important causes. Your investment can showcase your brand's values and commitment to the public good. Email corporate support at kpbs.org.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Wednesday, February 18th. We'll tell you about the late Jesse Jackson's ties to San Diego. More on that next, but first, the headlines. Zone Zero is a state-mandated requirement in effect right now pertaining to any new structures that are built within very high fire severity zones. Zone Zero is also known as an ember-resistant zone. It speaks to the area closest to a home or building where research proves it is most vulnerable to wind-driven embers spreading during a wildfire. San Diego Fire Rescue Chief Robert Logan says the creation of defensible space is one of the most effective steps a homeowner can take to reduce the risk of a wildfire. Pre-existing homes and property owners already located in very high fire severity zones have a deadline of February 2027 in order to comply with new state requirements. You can request a home wildfire risk assessment at sandiego.gov/defensible space. The winter weather is not over yet. More rain is expected throughout the county tonight and during Thursday's morning commute. The storms should clear out by the end of the week, but with more possible storms next week. The county and Cal Fire are distributing sandbags, some locations with sand and some without. Those locations can be found at alertsandiego.org. The San Diego Padres extended their contract with their current general manager. The ball club and A.J. Preller announced on Monday that they are in agreement on a multi-year contract extension. Preller will stay on as president of Padres baseball operations and general manager. He's been in the role since 2014. CBS 8 says one of Preller's biggest passions is trying to realize the vision of former team owner Peter Seidler to bring a championship to San Diego. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
KPBS has partnered with StoryCorps for the One Small Step program. We invite you to sign up to have a conversation with a person that may have different views so you may talk, not about politics, but to understand each other better. Sign up at kpbs.org/onesmallstep.
The late civil rights icon Jesse Jackson had ties to San Diego. Reporter Jacob Ayer says the campaign trail brought him here and into Mexico in the mid-80s.
During his first presidential campaign in 1984, Jesse Jackson visited San Diego and marched across the border into Tijuana.
His visit in 84 reminds me of Dr. King's visit in 1964 to San Diego, and that both were here fighting racist legislation.
KPBS Midday Edition spoke with SDSU professor of anthropology, Seth Malios, about Jackson's legacy in San Diego. King was fighting against California's Proposition 14 regarding the Fair Housing Act. 20 years later, Jackson, his protege, fought against a bill that became the Federal Immigration Reform and Control Act.
That racist legislation passed in both accounts, and that these individuals faced many protesters while they were here.
Malio says that the seeds for the National Rainbow Coalition started here in San Diego during the 1984 march. Jacob Ayer, KPBS News.
It's been more than a year since President Donald Trump began his mass deportation campaign. Here in San Diego County, a group of volunteers has been trying to document ICE activity. Reporter Gustavo Solis recently went on a ride-along with these volunteers.
The patrols begin before dawn. Volunteers drive around San Diego's immigrant neighborhoods looking for federal agents. They meet in dark parking lots, go over the routes for the day, make sure their radios are on, and hit the road.
Ya tiene todas las unidades radios, están prendidas, entonces nos vamos.
On this February morning, volunteers with Unión del Barrio are patrolling the streets of Logan Heights. They've been documenting ICE activity in San Diego for more than a year now. Benjamin Prado, one of the organizers, agreed to let KPBS tag along.
I mean, this type of work is not for the faint of heart. It is really people who are committed and dedicated.
It is one of several patrols the activist group regularly organizes throughout San Diego. On the day KPBS joined them in Logan Heights, separate patrols took place in Oceanside, Vista, and Escondido. They're trained to identify undercover ICE vehicles, usually clean, newer models with tinted windows and unmarked license plates. When they spot a vehicle, volunteers pull out megaphones and tell the neighbors to stay inside. Most days, the patrols, like the one KPBS went on, are quiet. We drove around Logan Heights for a little over an hour, nothing to report. But sometimes, they do spot ICE, and they speak up.
Get out of our community! We are sick of you separating families and terrorizing working people!
Sometimes, ICE agents confront the community patrols. In December, federal agents accused volunteers of obstructing their investigation.
You guys are impeding.
Hey!
You guys are impeding.
You need to step back.
You're impeding.
You need to step back. I am not impeding your job.
There have not been any large deployments in San Diego like in some other American cities, but federal data show that ICE agents arrested roughly 5,000 people in San Diego and Imperial counties last year.
You know, granted, we haven't seen the intensified type of roving patrols that are out in LA, in Los Angeles or Chicago, Minnesota, right?
Here it's happening slowly, Prado says. And if you aren't paying attention, you may think that San Diego is not impacted.
They are happening, but not to the scale, not to the intensity that other places have seen.
But recently, Union del Barrio says that their interactions with ICE agents have gotten increasingly tense, especially after the killings of Alex Preti and Renee Nicole Good in Minneapolis, U.S. citizens who the Trump administration called domestic terrorists. Romel Diaz is also an organizer, and he says that kind of rhetoric criminalizes their volunteer work and justifies violence against the community patrols.
Es la criminalización del pueblo. Y con eso justifica la represión o la opresión del pueblo.
Diaz's family fled the military dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet in Chile 40 years ago. He says the Trump administration's intimidation tactics remind him of the South American dictator. And volunteers are afraid.
No vamos a decir que no tenemos miedo. Obviamente tenemos miedo. Pero lo que hacemos es que el miedo no nos paralice.
But instead of being paralyzed by their fear, Diaz says more people are signing up for community patrols.
Y las últimas dos, tres semanas después de la primera muerte, del primer asesinato de René, ha crecido el interés.
Prado says Unión del Barrio offers multiple training programs. Some teach people the basics of community patrols, and others show volunteers how to keep watch over their own blocks. Something they do not teach, Prado says, is to get in between federal agents and their targets. Volunteers are told to identify, confirm, and notify, not obstruct.
And in this way, families can, you know, take the necessary precautions and, you know, not put themselves in unnecessary risk and get detained.
ICE did not respond to questions from KPBS about these community patrols. Gustavo Solis, KPBS News.
Plumbers, electricians, and other building maintenance workers across the CSU system are off the job this week. Reporter John Carroll went to the picket line at San Diego State.
Who's got the power?
We got the power.
These are the voices of the people that keep the buildings at San Diego State University running. They're some of about 1,100 Teamsters who do those jobs across the 22 campuses of the CSU system. Carlos Sanchez is the lead shop steward at SDSU, and he's also on the negotiating committee. He says he and his fellow Teamsters are on strike for a simple reason.
Unfair labor practice, simply because they want to honor our third year of our contract. We had to strike in 2023 to get this three-year contract. And here we are striking again so they could honor the third year.
The CSU Chancellor's Office said in a statement that the Teamsters agreed to reopen bargaining if a certain level of new ongoing funds were not received in 2025. The statement says, quote, "That's exactly where we are," unquote. CSU says it will continue to negotiate in good faith and they don't anticipate any disruption to student services. John Carroll, KPBS News.
For many families with kids, after-school activities and summer camp are unaffordable. For our next installment of Price of San Diego, reporter Katie Anastas shares how one family keeps the costs under control.
Oak Park resident Stephanie Romero has four kids. When her oldest, Isabella, wanted to try ballet, she shopped around.
And really, the affordability and the pricing led me to the rec centers.
The city has 60 recreation centers. They offer sports, art classes, and camps at a fraction of the price of many other providers. That includes summer camp, which can cost families hundreds of dollars a week per child.
I've enrolled my two of my boys in summer camps at the rec center that were $50 a week.
The rec center's camps come with another perk, field trips.
The field trips that they were going to was something that I don't think I would have the budget for to take my whole entire family. Otherwise, they've gone to the zoo, they've got to the plunge, so I think it's a pretty good deal.
Another favorite summer camp provider for the Romeros has been the New Children's Museum downtown. Without the scholarships the museum offers, it wouldn't have been an option for the family.
That would have been $2,000. That's insane. I wouldn't even make that in... Sorry, I don't want to tear down. I wouldn't even make that in, like, a paycheck, you know?
Romero also recommends the public library's Discover and Go program. It offers free passes to places like the Museum of Us and Skate World. Katie Anastas, KPBS News.
As we do for you each and every week, here's another installment of the pod behind the package. This week's combo features our arts reporter, who covered the 8th annual Black Comics Day as part of San Diego's Black History Month offerings. Here's that chat.
I'm so excited to be here this week with a reporter. She's so fun. She covers the coolest stuff. And she really, to me, is like an expert on a lot of things involving our county here of San Diego County. We are going to put our hands together. I'll put my hands together. For Beth Accomando here with us on Pod Behind the Package. Hi, Beth.
Hi, thank you.
No problem.
A lovely introduction.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to have you. You were busy this weekend, as you really are every weekend, if we're being honest.
Oh, there's too much to do.
Tell me what I missed. I'm so sad. I made it about 2 years ago. This year I missed it, unfortunately. But fill me and the audience in on what you saw at Black Comics Day.
Sure. So this is the 8th annual Black Comics Day. I am lucky enough to have been here when it started, and it began at the Malcolm X Library, a little small event, and it's grown and grown. And Keith and Jones is the one who founded it. He's also the publisher of Kid Comics and the Power Knights. And this year, as always, it's a collection of Black creators. And this year, as usual, I came home with an armload of comics, and having spoken to a lot of people and discovered a lot of things, one of the things that I thought was really interesting this year, and I think it's been going on for a while, but there were a number of publishers who were doing comics that really are rooted in history and uncovering stories about Black history and Black culture that are not taught in the schools or just not discussed. The main one was this one called Defiant, about Robert Smalls, who stole a warship from the South and went north and helped win the war. And it's in a comic, and it's great. You're getting history, and you're getting art, and a great comic, and a great story.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think what's cool about Black comics in general is that a lot of the time, not all the time, they slip in some of that actual history, right? Mm-hmm. When we look at Black Panther, obviously, with Ryan Coogler, or even more directly, we look at Sinners, we are looking at a film that is telling a story, but we are also learning factual history as it regards to the Black community and Black people. And I think that is kind of something that seems to be unique to Black comics, where, you know, we want to get that history, but then we also are going to have some superhero powers, and we're going to be floating in the air. And, you know, so I think that that intersection of history and creativity and freedom, I think, is very, very powerful. When you go throughout the World Beat Center, which is really like the hub and the heart for a lot of these events, and you talk to people this eighth year, are there any changes or differences? I know you talk to the intimacy of it, where you can actually talk to people behind the comics, whereas at Comic-Con, you got to wait in that line, it's no guarantee, but you still get to meet these publishers, these authors in person, right? Is that intimacy one of the selling hooks, you think, for Black Comic Day?
I think so. It's really nice. You know, Comic-Con used to be less crowded, and you hear a lot of people talking about, oh, back in the day, you could, like, go out to the pool and talk to Jack Kirby or, you know, something like that. And you can still meet creators there, too. But here, it's nice that, I mean, even somebody like Kevin Grievous, who created the Underworld series, plays one of the Lycans, he's probably one of the bigger names that's there. And he's just sitting there chatting with people, taking time to talk about the comic that he created, why it's important to him, why it's important to come to Black Comics Day every year. And it's nice. And sometimes hearing a personal story makes you want to buy the comic more than just, you know, you walk through and everything looks kind of interesting. The artwork pops on covers. But then you hear people talk about, like, hey, this is what I put into it, or this is why this story hooked me, and this is why I felt this needed to be told because it hasn't been told before. And you talk to these people, and it makes their work much more personal, and you feel connected to it in a way you don't necessarily feel when you just walk into a comic book store.
Once again, this was Beth Accomando, our very, very talented arts reporter with us on Pod Behind the Package. Thank you, Beth.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Your celluloid addiction with the Cinema Junkie podcast, where you can mainline film with the people who make them, as well as those who love them, program them, and celebrate them for their cultural impact. Listen to Cinema Junkie wherever you get your podcasts.